we did want to, because obviously have you here in the studio, and we feel
actually
like,
just didn't want to like pay a vet, so yes, we had you come in.
Took my joke again. Stop.
We're like, actually, we have my horse out back to look at.
Yeah, actually, you got your hoof testers on you because Uno's feet.
He's out back.
You guys may be surprised. I started the timer when I came in.
Howdy, and welcome to the Three Stride Podcast, where we take a humorous look at the equestrian world. Here are your hosts, Laura Fernandez, Julia Hansen, and Molly Heroy. Giddy up.
Welcome to the Three Stride Podcast. I'm Laura Fernandez, joined by Julia Hansen, Molly Heroy, and this is part two of our interview with Dr. Winchell. Dr. Winchell, I find this so awesome. Is that you have truly traded in your cowboy boots and you are riding now and you competed at a horse show.
What?
Yeah, I
know.
He
traded in his cowboy boots for some Parlanti half shafts,
oh.
Right?
Wait, so, okay, how did you get back, I mean, not get back into riding, but how did you make this call to then start riding show jumping? Because you're jumping now.
Yeah, no, I think it started out more of a joke, you know, that we started bringing these horses in and
you and Genevieve, who we also had on the podcast, import horses and import buy sell. I guess that's brokering.
Yeah.
And so you started as a joke.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we got the first horses in, she said I couldn't ride them unless I had paddock boots and a helmet. So I bought a paddock boots and a helmet so I could ride them. And then now we went to the show in Thermal and I was like, it's my horse. I was like, I can ride it. She's like, no, you cannot ride the horse. And I was like, I bought him. I can ride
him. You're like, he's mine.
And she's like, no, you're going to mess him up. It's not going to work. You can't ride this horse. And she's like, but well, if you're going to do it, you're going to have to buy it. A coat and,
yeah,
and
all the gear. It.
And so I was like, all right, let's go. So,
you're like sold.
So I went and bought all the gear. I got the coat. I got the pants. I've already got the half shafts. And so then she was like,
then she was like panicked, like, oh no.
So I did. I went, we just put him out, did the 0.65s, did the 0.70s. Like it was
awesome. It literally got sent to our barn group chat and they're like, oh my God, look how cute this is. Dr. Winchell showed.
And you did well.
It was good. Yeah.
Well, and I think Genevieve said that was your first time legitimately
doing
coursing,
the full
coursing,
course,
right?
Oh yeah, like I think I jumped like three jumps in a row prior to doing a full course.
It's amazing
course.
You could remember the course. I mean, obviously you're smart, you're learned a doctor, but jeez.
Yeah. No, we went through it, we walked it, and looked at the setup, like, and I like memorized it and went through it like 100 times. But the nice thing is, I think the video's like the second time through, you know, so it was mate had one time around to get the jitters out.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Did you have any show nerves?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like the nice thing is the horse Teddy.
Teddy
condition. That horse is a champ. I mean, he's like, all right, you know nothing. I'm going to take you around this. You're going to be
like,
okay.
All right, I'm going to make you canter and steer. The rest is on you.
You did. You hit every spot. It looked, it flowed. It was awesome.
It was really good.
Yeah, it really was. I will have to, we will share that video. We have to on the social.
Well, and we have to say, Genevieve was showing the horse in the 20s.
In the 20s, the same week.
The same week. And then this horse is just like, yeah, I got you for the 0.70s.
He probably sees them both walk up and he's like, who's it going to be today? And then Dr. Winchell grabs, he's like, yes,
it is going to be an awesome day.
It's going to be an easy day.
No, that horse has a great mind. I mean, how many horses go from meter 20s to the packing somebody around the 0.70s?
Yeah, amazing. Great.
Says a lot about the horse.
Yeah, he is.
He's like, that's a sales ad right there.
Yeah. I know. Teddy.
Well, that's what I tell Jen. It's like, I'm her amateur. If she wants to sell horses, like, just put me. There's nobody more amateur than me.
Well, can an amateur ride it? Can a kid ride it? My husband can ride it.
Yeah.
Here it goes. That's how you sell a horse. Because get on Fiona, you're going to have some problems.
It's so good. So now you and Genevieve are importing horses, selling horses. obviously you are the one that's doing the PPE going right now into the start of the year. I mean, I feel like right now the horse sales market is very hot. And if someone is going through the process, they find the horse that they love, they go to get the PPE, what would be three red flags on a PPE? Because you actually made a comment. It's not pass or fail of a PPE.
No.
But three red flags that you would see and tell the client, hey, this is my concerns.
I mean, I don't know if I have three. I guess the big thing is don't buy a lame horse. For me, I think it starts way before that, before the pre-purchase exam. I think a lot of times people have to be realistic. You know, what kind of horse are you looking at? What level is that horse going to be? Has the horse been performing at that level before you go to look at it? I think a lot of those things play into the decision making. And I think the pre-purchase exam is really only a very small portion of that final outcome in trying to find a horse, because my level of risk, what I assume is risk to buy a horse, there's always risk, right?
Yeah.
The horse could fall over the next day and you don't know what's going to happen, but there's always a risk buying horses. The question becomes, what level of risk am I willing to take?
What can I manage to?
Yeah. Like, can some people, like, the horse has to have perfect x-rays.
Which means, you know, nothing to me.
If the horse doesn't have perfect x-rays, it can't pass. Some people, the horse has to be performing at the level, you know? And I think that's, unfortunately, in the pre-purchase exam, we've gotten away from that a little bit. The big thing is, for me, is can the horse perform at the level that I want it or that person wants? Because that's the most important thing. Is he performing at that level? Can he stay at that level? And trying to decide, or am I looking to move up? Is he a meter 20 that I need to move up to a meter 35? All those things need to go into that decision-making process. And sometimes the vet isn't the best part of that process. You know, I think that we can try to help decide which part, you know, some of the problems, or try to forecast, say, hey, this horse has an area where maybe he's got kissing spine, maybe he's got an OCD in his hock, maybe he's got a small fragment in the back of the fetlock, something in the front. He's a little short today because he's got foot issues, but trying to figure out which one of those and kind of fit that to your level of risk is probably what it is. If I have a client call from out of state to do a pre-purchase exam that's not a regular client for mine, a lot of times I like to send those radiographs to their veterinarian. I like to let them look at the radiographs, because that veterinarian, or a lot of times have the trainer involved, because that trainer, that veterinarian, is able to gauge that person's level of risk a little better than I can for somebody I talk to on the phone for 30, 40 minutes, you know, and that's where I look at it. I mean, very rarely do I say, don't buy this horse. I mean, have I said that? Yes. Some horses just have big enough problems, or at least there's such a risk later on that maybe that is what it is.
Yeah. But I do appreciate the research of what you need to do on your end. It's like reviewing show records, seeing what they're doing.
Are they doing the job?
Yes.
Is there a big gap? There's so much you can look at that's just public record on USEF and everything else that can give you as much, if not more, information than the vetting. The vetting's important, but it's also like, okay, she has this funny spot here on this x-ray, but when did you import this horse? Can we look at those x-rays? Okay, it's been exactly the same for the last 3 years. That's important.
Well, we have access to everything now.
Everything's digital.
So, yeah, I remember even going from buying my first horse at the time, which was, I don't know, like 15 years ago, to now, where it's such a different process even of doing the research. Yeah. And before it was, you got sent a show video.
That was kind of it.
That was what you had. So it's cool now that we can at least do that work as well, and then go to someone like Dr. Winchell and be like, okay, the horse is doing the job. Let's see what the x-rays look like, all that stuff, and can combine.
And everything. A big trainer on the West Coast that does a lot of sale horses just posted a thing that said, hey, before you send your horse to a sale barn, whether it's me or anybody else, you do a small pre-purchase exam with some flexions and some radiographs, so that you know what to expect and that you can say, hey, you know, she's had this or she has that or this showed up. And then before people come try it, and whatever else, something doesn't pop up on the vetting and everybody's shocked.
Like what I did.
Just know what you're managing.
Like what I did for Sylvan before I sent him back.
Well, that's beyond, but.
Well, that's what I had done for.
She did a pre-purchase exam and full workup on a horse that she didn't own, had no intention of owning.
I wanted to make sure he was set up for success and had everything he needed when he was going to this.
Before I sent him back, which is delightful as somebody who has leased a horse out.
Yes.
Well, and when I.
Dr. Winchell's looking at me like,
I think that's great. I mean, I think the thing about it is whoever you lease the horse from should be ecstatic because they got a horse back that is in as good or better shape than they
with
gave
all
it to
fresh
you.
Which
X-ray.
Is the ideal, but the x-rays, everything else, Dr. Winch is like, this lady's looking for 1200 bones to spend.
Anytime I've had a horse for sale, knowing it's going to be for sale, I do a pre-purchase.
Like a pre-pre-purchase.
Pre-pre-purchase for it's myself, nice know. Knowing I want to know if before I list them for sale and I'm asking X amount, and everyone these days too, for the bigger jumpers mainly, but everyone usually looks x-rays, but I want to have fresh x-rays before I send them off too. So there's a starting point of, hey, you love my horse.
Before you try it
here's
or
the
vet
x-rays.
It or do anything here. Look at this.
Yeah.
See if there's anything that bothers you.
Yeah.
So you're working with a barn in Europe. Are you doing, checking out all the horses when you do go over there prior?
Yeah. So when we do go over, a lot of times, I mean, that's the advantage. Jen being a trainer, she can ride the horses. I can watch the horses move under saddle. I can watch them trot down the alleyway on the hard ground, on the pavement, and then we can have a pretty good idea. A lot of those horses over there have films, from, say, previous sales, or sometimes we'll get radiographs after we look at the horses, you know, depending on which ones we want to see. Some of the horses we actually have bought more off of video, watch video flexions, watch the horse under saddle. The guys at Grand Sport Horses that we've worked with do such a great job. We trust that, you know, they send us the video. We see, we know the horse. We've bought 7-8 horses from them now at this point. So they know the type of horses we're looking for. And that kind of helps. But yeah, if somebody can sit on the horse and ride it, you can watch the horse move in person. And then I always, if I can, I like to put my hands in the horse. Just run your hands down the horse, touch them, feel their legs, feel the tendons, make sure everything feels tight.
Yeah.
I think that makes a big difference if you can do that when you're looking at horses.
Show season, obviously, is now going to be in full swing. Anything that you recommend? I know we spent the episode previously talking about ulcer care, but is there anything you recommend to your clients just to get your horses in tip-top shape for show season?
Well, I think it's like everything. We go through this period in the fall a lot of times where we kind of slow down. We don't ride as much, but training for horses isn't that much different from athletes. You know, we go through these cycles where we've got to have a conditioning phase, you know, so those horses have to be on a good plane of nutrition. That's always got to be at the forefront. You know, work with the farrier if there's any problems in the off season, getting the feed in condition, catch up on vaccines, obviously Coggins. We've got to get that before the start of the show season. And then preconditioning, getting those horses through a conditioning phase and timing that with your show season. I think that you've got to have that horse in shape. He can't be laid off and then go to the show and expect him to jump at his best. So you got to have those horse conditioned. Maybe you've got to have kind of a cycle in that training where you've got a, you know, long, maybe not as intense phase where you do your conditioning. You've got a shorter phase where you start prepping those horses where they got to jump a little higher. They got to jump, do something a little more difficult, technical. And then they probably have to have maybe, which we don't talk about, is do they have to have, you know, a week or so of rest before you put them through this show cycle?
Oh, now you're speaking Laura's love language.
It was like, Molly, you totally
stole your line.
You stole my line right out of me.
Whoa. Dr. Markgrove, like, better rest. Watch out. Rest on. Although Laura, in my research lately that I've been reading. I was a big proponent of like no days off.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that they need to be worked hard every day, but that they, especially in a place like Las Vegas where there's not a lot of turnout, there's not a lot of pasture, that they need to be doing something every day, which I do still think.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I also do think, especially Ulstery horses and some of the stuff I've read, that maybe like two very, very light days, like tack walk, walker,
trail ride,
may be better than what I have always pushed, which is 7 days a week hacking.
So,
but we do have an expert here, so let's get his take on this.
No, I think it's for me, I think it's a big variety. I think that adding variety into that routine, whether it be a turnout one day, is it a lunge, changing that program up a little bit, probably does help them. I agree with you. I think that getting those horses out, whether even if it's just a turnout or a quick little lunge or in the round pen, so that they can come back in, they drink water, that I think that keeps everything else much better moving through the system and keeps them a lot healthier.
Yeah, I have to. I mean, I do one trail a week, but I Molly and I were texting and she had told me about Fiona and the ulcers. And I go, any increase in stress? I go, bring her over to Auntie Laura's house or Auntie Laura's barn to take her on some trails for a month.
It's true. She'll probably love it.
She'll probably
scope crystal clear.
Honestly, if I could be a part of the care for the horses for that rest and relaxation week, sign me up. I could take every horse on a trail ride. I love it. This morning, Garcon and I went out on a trail ride. He went right to that door and I bent down, opened the gate.
Out in the desert.
Out in the desert.
Come
all by myself.
Fiona. Come pick her up.
All by myself out there. I do text people when I leave for the trail just to give them a heads up. And then I try to avoid, because the gate to exit the trail is right by the arena. I try to monitor if there's any kids in that arena, because I've gotten a couple kids almost eat it off when I'm like trying to get out the gate.
Yeah, because there's the trees that block it. So you just hear like a gate
shaking it. I'm
like, oh, sorry. Just got your kid bucked off.
I was like, sorry about that.
Just going to go trail now.
I do think in what I've read, a little bit more of an active recovery might be better than what I've been.
I'm just telling
preaching.
You, I am quick trailer ride away. Drop her off. Let me go take her on some.
Drop her off at daycare.
Fiona's out on the trail for the first time in her life. She's like, she's either going to love it or just be like, sprint back to the barn.
You know what?
You never know.
She'll feel like my numbing body that makes horses go nowhere.
We used to walk around in the desert at Judy's old place, but.
Okay. So we did want to, because we're obviously have you here in the studio. And we feel
actually just didn't want to pay a vet. So we had you come in.
You took my joke again.
Actually, we have my horse out back to look at.
Yeah, actually, you got your hoof testers on you because Uno's feet.
He's out back.
You guys may be surprised. I started the timer when I came in.
He's billing us.
We're all getting a bill.
Just send our bills to Amanda at Balias Insurance. Yeah. This is a host read ad for Balias Insurance.
Yeah. Okay, Jay, talk about. No, I can't do it.
So cheap.
So something I've really gotten into research-wise, trying different things, is hoof care. I have never in my life had a horse with such bad feet until I had Uno. He grows weird. He grows flat up front. He has breakage. We've tried everything. He's so sensitive to everything. I've actually even talked to Molly, who talked to one of her.
I'm talking to old school
people.
Cowboys. I'm like, try a magnet. I don't know.
So I did try, or I have been incorporating magnetic therapy. I try to do every day for 15 minutes. You're supposed to start to help the blood flow, increase the growth. I've also upped his supplement. He's on Farrier's formula.
Double strength?
Yes. Upped that. And then I've been using a hoof conditioner inside the hoof and the frog and all that, and then on top, which I have noticed it's been better. But I'm curious, and I know a lot of people deal with hoof issues with horses. I mean, sometimes I look at his feet and I'm just all my work is gone, and it's the basis of this incredible animal. So I wanted to know if you had any advice, research, tips, anything about horse hoof care, especially for horses that just struggle with having healthy, normal feet.
Because he just crumbles, right?
His front two crumble, his back are usually fine. Front two are the worst.
No, and I think that's always a big problem. I mean, if it's not a recurring theme, I mean, nutrition's always a big one, right? That they're getting the right mineral balance, they're getting the right supplements. But there's going to be some of these horses that despite, you know, adding like Farrier's formula or some of these things that are out there, they supposedly, right? They've got the biotin, the methionine, mm-hmm. they've got some of the proteins and everything to help with this hoof wall. We still have trouble. And what it's always tough,
yeah,
as you're already finding out, to try to figure out what's going to work for this horse to make the hoof wall better. Sometimes it's trial and error to add some different things to the horse's diet.
What about like blood work? Like, you know, we do our blood work and say like, okay, you need vitamin D. Like, I don't really hear about that as much with the horses. Why aren't we, is it harder to pinpoint on a horse? Like,
well, I think there's so many different vitamins and minerals and components that play a role in the hoof health that it's very hard to pinpoint.
But just even in general, you know, like we get our blood work taken once a year and they go, okay, you need an iron supplement and some vitamin D.
Yeah. But even with that, like I ran some blood the other day and a lot of the horses, we're starting to see some low phosphorus. But if you look at some of the things that I talked to a nutritionist, I called Brad Kloss locally here and I said, hey, these horses are all low phosphorus. And he says, it's probably, if they're on any type of grain, it probably has nothing to do with phosphorus, but it's magnesium. So there's interaction, you know, calcium, zinc, and yeah. phosphorus and magnesium, all these things have some interaction. So sometimes it may not always be that we're not getting them enough for the right source. Maybe we're missing a combination. Maybe we've got too high of levels of some mm-hmm. things. And I think that that's something we sometimes miss. I've had some luck adding MSM to the mixture, having something like a Farrier's formula or mm-hmm. a mineral supplement, adding a little MSM, because you can get some free sulfur, which is important in some of the protein synthesis and producing keratin in that hoof wall. So adding maybe MSM into okay. that routine a little bit may help. I think watching the environment, if that horse has, you know, wet to dry environment. So if the stall gets really wet and mucky, if it's getting really deep, trying to keep that environment as good as possible. Because mm-hmm. sometimes if you get a really wet hoof wall all the time, depending on where they're standing, if they're, you know, the water overruns or they're standing in something there because of that, that may be something you want to watch. I do like to coat the coronary band, you know, whether it be like a Hoof Alive, some people bag balm, something, okay. or there's several conditioners out there now to try to keep that new growth, you know, along yeah. the coronary band healthy. I think that what grows down are all good things to look at, but, you know, nutrition, maybe add the MSM and then continue with the conditioning the hoof and then keeping up with your farrier. I think that mechanics sometimes, you know, if the foot mechanics yeah. are off, that foot's going to break off or it's a little imbalanced. And there's not a great answer, unfortunately, a lot of times. I think you've got to continue to try some of those things and yeah. figure out, but maybe look at adding the MSM. I've had some luck with that.
Okay. No, I'm definitely going to do that. And it's, I mean, ever since we brought him in from Europe, it's always been, and I'm sure I'm sure that's a big part of it, but.
But it's just like some people have thick, full head of hair and some people.
Yeah. It's
Garçon.
It's so, Garçon. So strange too, to me that. Is it different to have the front 2 feet brittle and break down and grow flat where the back hoofs are? I've never had issues with the back hoofs.
No, I think that for whatever reason, we have a lot more trouble in the front end. But also, if you think about the way a horse carries the weight, yeah. we're putting a lot more pressure, you know, on the front quarter or front half of that body compared to the hind. As we go along, we're, you know, over half for sure of that weight is getting carried on the front end of the horse and yeah. takes a little different mechanical pressures across there. And there's definitely genetic component to some of yeah. this, that some of these horses genetically just aren't going to develop the same keratin and hoof wall that maybe another horse will.
Okay. No, I'm excited and curious.
But MSM.
The MSM and
MSM.
I mean, even the stuff that I've incorporated with the magnetic therapy and the conditioner and increasing the Farrier's formula, I have noticed a positive change in the right direction. I don't think his feet up
never
front are ever
great.
Going. Yeah, exactly. But even working with our farrier, who's every single time checking in, we're looking at his feet, we're looking at his angles, everything like that. He's even like, you know, we do what we can, but there's no quick fix that's just going to make his hooves grow perfectly and stay strong.
So. No, and that's the bad thing, you know, that once you make a change, if you think about it, the hoof wall's growing about 10 millimeters, you know, a centimeter a month. And so you could take a year to get those changes down into the substance of the hoof wall. And so it really takes a long time to change that over. And, you know, that's like the old adage you're saying, you know, no hoof, no horse. And we've got to always stay on top of that because it takes so long to get that hoof wall back.
Yeah.
Well, during our yearly meeting with you, we'll go through everything.
Yeah. Check back on us in 6 months. Yeah. We'll have a new list of problems.
Yes. We'll have you back in to talk through all our issues with our horses.
Perfect.
Yeah. This is the way we weasel into appointments with Dr. Winchell.
I just track him down wherever he goes. He doesn't know I've got low jack on his truck.
That's awesome. Dr. Winchell, you are truly a three-stride favorite, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming in, especially for two episodes. Really do appreciate it. You are so knowledgeable. And now I'll be probably competing against you in the show ring. He's probably going to surpass me pretty quickly.
Oh, man.
I don't know about that. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Winchell. Catch new episodes every single Tuesday and follow us on all social channels at the Three Stride Podcast.